Version number 13123, Mr. Cyril Mount.
Reel 12.
Right.
Now, you'd fallen ill with malaria
just the
day after getting ashore at Sicily.
Second day.
So what happened then?
Then I was in this tent. It was a medical dressing station, I think. There were some wounded in there, infantry wounded, but none of our lot. And I was evacuated on a boat. Again, I was sort of hallucinating by then and running a temperature and shaking. They didn't know whether it was sandfly fever or malaria at that point, but it was. When I got back to hospital in Sfax, they did blood tests, and of course, it was a recurrence, a relapse of MT malaria, which is the nasty sort. And it may have been aggravated by sandfly, but actually I heard afterwards that Sicily did have malaria-bearing mosquitoes. So I may have been bitten, but I think it would have taken longer for that. I don't know. It may have just triggered it off. I don't know. So when I came out of hospital in Sfax, I went to a transit camp, Tripoli. A huge transit camp full of big EPIP tents with about 8 people to a tent. I had a big... Oh, this is what happened. I had a big pack. We were supposed to fold our blankets up, and they give us blankets and ground sheets and put your pack in line. You know, it wasn't a very strict sort of regime, but you had to literally sweep the sand in the tent every morning. And I had a lot of loot in the big pack, which I had two pairs of binoculars, I had a Beretta pistol, other odds and ends, souvenirs if you like, and my small pack I kept with me because I had my sketchbook and my watercolours in there, but I hadn't any other valuable things in. But one day I discovered my big pack had disappeared, it had been nicked. And I was very angry about this, and I went and reported it to the CO of the transit camp. And that was when I first met this guy, Major Carter. And, he was sort of sympathetic in a way, and yet he was sort of amused at, you know, okay, somebody's nicked the stuff that you nicked anyway. You found this stuff in different ITI and German positions, you know, so tough sort of thing. But then he said, well, you know, why didn't you keep the things you valued most in your small pack, which I was carrying around on a long strip around my neck like a handbag. And I said, because I got my sketchbook in there and I value that, and the photographs from India. And so he wanted to have a look then, and I showed him all my drawings, it was about 30 or more, and he was quite amazed. He was a really nice guy because he was one of those people that you see all too rarely in galleries in Bond Street and buying pictures. He obviously knew about painting and he had a collection of his own, and he was very enthusiastic and very encouraging about my work. And he said, well, I'm not going to send you back to unit yet, he said. You've been ill, and he said, and you've had a rough trip. Because I told him the whole story.
Which unit did he mean by your unit? Did he mean 11th RHA?
11th RHA was where he should have had me sent back to.
Or were you trying to get back to your old unit?
I don't think I was trying to get anywhere. At that point, I think I wanted to go home because I knew I was time expired. Other people who'd been out there as long as me had gone home. I'd done my 6 years.
So how did he encourage you then? What did he do for you?
He was really encouraging about my drawings, and I'd never thought of them as art before, but he was talking in terms of art, which I didn't even know about. And I didn't know what art was, I don't think. I knew I just drew and made records of things. And he gave me a job in the office. And I'd never seen a typewriter before, I don't think. And I sort of learned how to type with two fingers. But I think that was just a dummy, because there were other people typing out sort of standing orders for the day. And after about a few days of that, he said, I've got a real job for you, which you'll enjoy, and I'd like you to paint a mural in the officer's mess. And the officer's mess was a palatial Italian villa just across the road from the transit camp. And what they wanted was, in each alcove of this big dining room, they wanted a naked lady from, what was the magazine? A guy called Varga, an American guy called Varga, did these very sort of accentuated titted ladies with an airbrush. I think they're collector's items now, even the prints, but I was given a whole sheaf of these that somebody had collected and told they wanted a different bint, as it were, in each alcove with a suitable sort of landscape. I actually did a landscape of sort of holes and camel scrub and petrol cans behind a couple of them, you know, and escarpments and wadis and rocks and things. I really enjoyed this, you know. These women appeared like mirages against different desert landscapes. They thought that was fine. Everybody sort of used to crowd in at lunchtime to see how the mural was getting on. So I had a whale of time. And then one day he came in. I was really almost on Christian name terms with these officers. You know, they were all officers in transit, but they were such nice people compared with, you know, what I'd experienced in the latter days, you know. And he came in one day and said, I'm going to put you in for Worsby Round.
What did that mean?
And I didn't know what that meant. And he said, well, it's a War Office Selection Board, which has just been established here in Tripoli. So I went along there, my best pressed shirt and shorts, and I was going to be there for 3 days. I'd taken, you know, a toothbrush and everything. And it was 3 days of absolute sort of hell. We were taken out to sea and dropped into water up to our nostrils, and we had to wade ashore with and keep a rifle above our heads, and then sort of climb up this slippery, clay, messy cliff, and then sort of charge through an assault course. You know, jumping off, climbing up a wall, and then jumping off the wall about 12 feet high down into a muddy pool, which could have had spikes or anything in it, you know, but it wasn't. It was only about a foot deep. And then through long tunnels. It was a really tough assault course. And then you had to take charge of, take turns of taking charge of people. You were being watched all the time by a whole team of.
What were the others on it like? What were they?
Well, a lot of them.
Because you were only a Lance Bombardier.
I was a Lance Bombardier with one stripe, yes. And I don't think, as far as I can remember, there was anybody else who had one stripe. Everybody else seemed to be sergeants and sergeant majors. And it was very funny. There was one time that I was in charge, you know, of this platoon, and I had to sort of lead them into those situations which were, I can't remember the exact details, but they'd actually fed you a situation, and you had to sort of do a quick sort of assessment of that situation, and then take the appropriate action with these people. But I seemed to get through all right. And then there were indoor games, if you like, when they projected stuff on the screen. You had to write down the first thing that came into your head. They wanted to know what hobbies I had, what books I'd read, and, oh, God, all sorts of things like that. And they, even at mealtimes, you knew you were being watched, about whether you held your knife and fork properly or whatever. But at the end of it all, I thought, well, I don't stand a bloody earthly here. You know, it's good fun. I've enjoyed this, but I don't stand an earthly. But at the end, I discovered that I'd been one of the third that had been chosen.
So what happened then?
Then I made this long journey back by three-tonner to, I think, first of all, RA-based depot in Al Marza. And then on to Palestine, to an infantry OCTU, officer cadet training unit.
Infantry, not artillery.
Oh no, this is absolutely compulsory for everybody. They had to do 3 months infantry training. So I guess it was, yes, it was October, early October, I suppose, or late December, late September, when I got back there to, it was near Haifa, a place called Acca, A-C-C-A, and it was just a large camp of wooden huts, bug-infested beds, bug-infested lavatories. I think that was deliberate. I think they'd imported the bugs from somewhere. They were really big ones. And that was real hell. For 3 months, we had the most vicious sergeants and sergeant majors who would call you every bloody name under the sun and then say, "Sir," at the end of it, because we had white bands around our caps. Yeah, we were given, we were allowed to buy from an officer's naffy. We were allowed to buy our first Herbie Johnson cap. But then we were issued white bands to wear around the cap to denote that we were officer cadets. And we drilled, and I enjoyed it because it wasn't new to me. It was a bit like the time I spent in the detention barracks in Lucknow, very much like that. And the bugs, God, you sat on the bog seat, and there were cracks on these seats, and the bugs used to come up and bite. So you had a line of bug bites on either cheek of your arse, and until you got wise to it, and you put paper down and sat on the paper. But the beds were buggy as well. The main thing I remember about that place is bugs.
And training was just basic infantry training.
It was basic infantry training, and with all the theory that went with it, the theories of tactical and what's the other word? I can't remember. And the whole chain of command, right down from GHQ, right down to the platoon. And again, you had to sort of be a platoon commander and take charge and charge up these hills at Brenz and open up live ammunition firing across this valley.
Did you have any trouble taking command of men? You're not really a Lance Bombardier.
Well, I wasn't a Lance Bombardier anymore then. Nobody knew who'd been what. I suppose everybody was still young. I mean, there were very few people.
But could you did you have that in you to tell people what to do?
It grew. It came, yeah, very easily in the end. Yeah, I think I had the confidence of having been a regular, and a lot of these people had been called up. There were Aussies. There were two Aussies and there were three Kiwis, New Zealanders, in the group, in our squad. We developed a tremendous sort of squad feeling, a team feeling, for each other. And I remember going out very early in the morning before it was light and raiding this orchard, bloody great jaffas the size of coconuts, and coming back with these stuff down our shirts. But if we'd been caught, I mean, it would have been out on our ear immediately, back to the ranks. But we really enjoyed those jaffas.
How did they assess you at the end of the course?
You did lots of theory papers about tactics, and you had to make diagrams, and you had to sort of make out sort of a chain of orders, assessment of the situation, appreciation of the situation, all that sort of thing in theory. And then also you were tested, I suppose, on how you behaved when you took command of situations.
And that was a 3-month course.
That was 3 months solid graft, at the end of which we were very, very fit. Well, because there was PT and lots of stuff like that. All the time we were being hammered by these people who, made like they detested us. They loathed us. We were the most vile scum they'd ever come across. But at the end, when we finished, there was a big sort of piss-up, and they were all very nice and friendly. But, they pointed out that this is how they'd been trained to treat us.
Did you all pass? Did most pass?
I think everybody passed at that point, yeah.
And then, so that would be about January.
Christmas. We left just after Christmas, because I remember seeing Walt Disney's Fantasia at a cinema in Haifa. And that was Christmas. and there was a Christmas sort of piss up. I think that was the end of it. So it was a whole of October, November, December. Yeah, then we went off to our various regimental specialist units, or whatever. I went to Almaz anyway to do a 3 months gunnery course.
And what did that entail?
That was starting from rock bottom, being a member of a gun team, each number of a gun team, for week after week after week.
And which guns were you practicing on?
25 pounders. And going out on the ranges and actually firing into the desert. And being, you know, even a quad driver, even driving a damn gun in a quad and being a number one sergeant and then right through. And
so that was a practical course.
That was practical, yes, plus hours and hours in the classroom learning trigonometry and how to use a theodolite and range finders, how to plot your positions on a plane table, using maps and plane tables and drawing your grids, drawing panoramas even. So yeah, that was, it was quite intensive, but
was
also
your
enjoyable.
Maths up to the theory of
yes, because when I was a boy at Woolwich, I'd and afterwards in India, it was compulsory when I was a trumpeter. I still had to go to school, and I got a first class certificate in education in India, and maths was a big one. Although I was never any good at maths at school, but I learnt the maths that were relevant to gunnery. I could use a slide rule and log tables, and I knew what I was doing. But I mean, if anybody had asked me about ordinary maths, I don't think I would have been able to do it.
How long was this course for?
That was 3 months.
So that'd be to about March.
Yeah,
44.
It was end of March, and then we had a passing out parade. There was a lot of marching about too. We went and let off that. We were very, very smart, particularly after the infantry do. Yeah, we were like Sandhurst cadets when we were on parade, you know, with rifles and everything. And at the end of it, anyway, I passed out, and a couple of weeks after, I was still in Cairo, I had a week's leave in Cairo. I think when I came back, everybody was commissioned second lieutenant with one pip, and then when I came back they gave me another pip because of my regular service, I suppose.
So you became a lieutenant almost straight
away. So I became a full lieutenant, what was called a war substantive rank. And then I started looking forward to going home, because I was told I was definitely due for repat. And we were living in tents in the base depot. Ordinary
Almaza.
Yes, 180 pounders. And we were all in the same gang, you know, we'd all passed out together, and it was a very easy sort of life. We had dances, and Palestinian ATS girls would come, and I think one of my first sexual experiences was with a Palestinian ATS girl, and I took her back to my tent during one of these dances. But I think if I'd been discovered, that would have been kapoo again. See, I think I took a lot of chances with, you know, fraternizing with other ranks, Palestinians especially. Oh yes, I had a flutter with a wren as well in Alexandria, because in the midst of all this, waiting to go home, the boat came and went, because everybody was mustered, even the clerks, even the shithouse orderlies, and everybody was mustered up quickly from base depot and rushed off to Alex with rifles and Brens. Okay. Apparently the Greek Navy had mutinied. So we went trundling along this awful road from Cairo to Alex with all this real Fred Kano sort of army. totally ashamed of them, really, because they're such awful people. You know, they never shot a gun in anger in their lives. And we got to Alex, and we were deployed on various rooftops, and we had to cover these warships. I think there were two or three.
Were there any signs of mutiny aboard them?
No. All we knew was that they had overpowered their officers, and and they were nasty Greek communists. Well, by then, at that time, I was becoming very, very much a communist sympathizer myself. I think everybody was. This is why Labour got in at the end of the war. And I wasn't very popular with my views with some of my fellow officers later on. But I was more sympathetic to these, you know, after all, it was the communists who'd fought the bloody Germans in Greece. And I thought, well, there must be some reason why they mutinied. And I wasn't very enthusiastic about the whole thing, but...
Did anything actually happen?
Well, nothing happened. You know, we were told to stand down, and I think we kept the positions there. I don't know for whatever reason, but I remember going out into Alex and having quite a good time for quite a few nights, 4 or 5 nights, and met a very nice young Rengo. It was the first English woman I'd ever been out with. And that was very pleasant, yes. You know, it was a taste of...
When exactly like was that, home. Then?
That was April 44.
So you missed your...
I missed
trip
one
home.
Boat, yes. And then I went back to the base depot and carried on living the sort of life as before. Sort of
now, you mentioned, what was making you move towards being a communist sympathiser? What was making you feel like that?
I don't know. Just talking with the lads, I suppose. Talking about how rough it was in the 30s, getting jobs and trading, you know, how badly employers had treated people and exploited people.
So it was a long-standing thing. It had been developing.
It had been developing, yeah. I think there was also a sort of anti-upper class... thing.
And becoming
although we liked our own officers, we still, you know, were very much anti the higher classes, the privileged classes, if you like.
And you becoming an officer hadn't changed your views then?
No, I think I felt stronger then to air my views. I think I've always shut my mouth off too much though.
So what happened next then?
So what happened then? Well, we went back to living this sort of very easy life, going into Cairo every night, four of us to £180 a tent, you know, with camp beds which had been issued, and it was very luxurious sort of living, you know, getting pissed quite frequently because we could go to the officer's shop and buy booze. I had lots of money stashed away, you know, because I hadn't been spending any for years, and I was getting officer's pay as well on top of that. So, I bought a lot of things in Cairo to take home, and bits of jewellery and stuff. And eventually the boat came along and we sailed.
Where was that?
I think it was called the Devonshire, the boat, yeah.
And that would be May?
No, it wasn't.
It?
Sorry, that was the boat. It wasn't. It was going to be the Devonshire. It was the Otranto, which was the Orion line, and it was quite a luxurious liner. And that would be in May, and it took until 4 days after D-Day, about the 10th of June, before I got home, because we sailed up the Med and right out into the Atlantic. I think people thought we were going to America. And then we came all the way in again for some reason.
And what was your reaction?
In convoy.
When you got home?
And we were attacked.
Tell me about that.
Well, they were attacked by Stukas somewhere off... not long after we got through Med, we were dive-bombed, but nothing happened. Nobody got hurt, no boats were sunk. But the biggest fear was submarines, of course, and we didn't... We were in convoy, quite a big convoy, but I think we were beginning to be ascendant by that time.
What was your reception when you got back?
Well, I docked at Liverpool, and I'd managed to get myself involved in baggage... And as baggage officer, because I knew we were going to Liverpool, and I lived in Liverpool, and so I was able to go ashore, and I rang my father, who was by then he had a good position on the Mersey Docks and Harbour Board, and I was able to use the dock line phone, the transport officer, you know, transport, army transport officer, and his office was connected through to all the docks. So I rang my father, and he got through to my sister and mother, and eventually they came down to the pierhead and had a great reunion. My sister had grown from a 12-year-old to an 18-year-old. It was all very nice, in a way. And then, of course, I had to get back on the... We disembarked, but we had to go down to Woolwich Depot to be officially sort of... I don't know what you call it. Debriefed or something. I don't know. So I wasn't able to go home for a while. So I went down to Woolwich. I was in Woolwich for about 3 or 4 days, and I went home, and I got 6 weeks' leave. Well, I didn't.
Was it strange to have a leave after all that time?
Very, very strange. Very exciting. The odd thing was, I think my mother was embarrassed because I was an officer, and everybody else in that neighbourhood was just little private or lance corporal blonks, or, bloggins. And there were streamers across the street, sort of welcome home, so and so. Every day there was a different sort of banner hanging out, And, well, she didn't want anything to do with that. She didn't want me to be different. This was it. It was really funny. I went out with my father. I realised afterwards now he was totally under her thumb. We went out and we got really pissed on, what's that Yorkshire bit? Tetley's, about the only beer that had any strength in it. We must have drank about 12 pints of Tetley's each, and he bought me a signet ring, and we came back singing, our arms around each other, me with a hat on the back of my head, and again, if any red caps had caught us in Liverpool, I'd have been out here again. But we got through that one, and my mother was totally disgusted, because I threw up in the bathroom, and I think he was sick as well. But that was as close as I ever got to my father. After that, he clammed up.
Did he go back to how he'd been before? Or?
Yeah. I didn't see much more of them, really.
Did you enjoy your leave?
In some ways. I was very conscious of the fact that I was an officer. I don't think anybody else in that neighbourhood was. And yet, I wasn't allowed to wear civvies, obviously. I had to go out in uniform, and I tried to be as inconspicuous as possible. I wore a side cap, but nevertheless, it was obvious. And we're supposed to carry a stick as well, short cane, swagger stick, whatever you call it. I went out a lot with my sister, who was good fun in those days. Well, she still is. And we went around a lot. I borrowed a car. We were always laughing and joking, and this, of course, irritated my parents, because they didn't know what we were laughing at, and they thought we were laughing at them half the time. It was that sort of thing. We were just being kids again. I found a couple of girlfriends in that time. That wasn't very difficult. I mean, when I did go out with a Heavy Johnson cap on, they thought I was an American, so that was not really pulled. But it was okay to be a British officer as well as an American. But it wasn't a very eventful sort of leave, and I was very glad to be back.
Where were you sent to?
I was sent back to base depot at Woolwich, and I thought then I was going to become part of the fixed sort of complement of Woolwich base depot.
What as?
Well, I was just an officer who, about every day or every other day, went out on schemes with these very, very raw young recruits. We went into Kent, into the orchard areas of Kent, and doing the wireless schemes.
What type of thing?
Just sort of establishing communications between trucks.
Signalling.
Basically signalling, yeah. And watching the flying bombs come over. And then there was one night when we were all just settling down for dinner in the officer's mess, very posh officer's mess on the Grand Parade, which I never dreamt I'd ever be sitting in as an officer when I used to go up there to blow mess call as a trumpeter. I stood outside of the steps and sounded mess call for the officer's dress and mess. And there I was sitting in the same mess eating dinner with ATS girls waiting on us.